You are listening to Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, with your host, Randy Sutton. Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. I really do appreciate you taking the time to join us again this week. So let's take a walk into the briefing room where I'm going to give you my view from the blue. So I'm going to tell you a story. It's a story about how a police department dishonors the memory of one of their fallen officers. It's a story about how a police agency can embarrass themselves in front of the entire police community. Why? Because of some type of personal animosity or a failure to have a leadership that cares enough to do the right thing. Now, I do have a little bit of personal involvement in this, so I'm going to tell you a little bit about it. Glenview, Illinois, police officer Owen Masterson, he was a 20-year veteran of the Glenview Police Department, and he had been involved in an altercation. Shortly thereafter, he suffered a fatal heart attack. The police agency did everything possible not to allow him the honor of being a line of duty death when it was clearly related to his employment. They fought it. They fought it to the point where the former wife of Masterson was fighting for the benefits that go with a line of duty death for her child. Well, the Glenview Police Department refused to cooperate with concerns of police survivors, with the Department of Justice in sending the documentation necessary, and it took the former wife to contact me out of frustration, out of basically a sense of I don't know where to turn to next. And because of the fantastic work, after she explained to me what happened, it was clear to me this is a line of duty death, and it was not being treated as such. And she explained to me some of the politics of that agency. And you know what? There's politics that go on in every police department, but law enforcement leadership needs to step up when it comes down to one of their officers. And in this particular case, it did not happen. Concerns of police survivors did step in with the Department of Justice. And after they were told about the circumstances of this officer's death, they did, in fact, rule it a line of duty death, and his name was engraved in the wall just this year. I had the great honor of being visited by his former wife, and the one who pushed this and pushed this and pushed this. She came to our tent, where the Wounded Blue had a tent, a booth at Tent City, and we had a great chance to speak. Well, now it's not done yet, apparently, because now the pension board says that Officer Masterson's child can't get benefits because his parents were divorced. What are you talking about? What is going on in this little podunk, ridiculous police department of Glenview, Illinois? Is everybody in the government of this town a moron? Because what they are doing is absolutely outrageous. I think somebody's been butthurt, actually. I think perhaps the fact that they didn't get their way in trying to block the fact that this was a line of duty death. I think it finally has shown their true colors, if you will. In the state of Illinois, pension code specifically says that any police officer who suffers a heart attack or stroke as a result of the performance and discharge of police duty shall be considered as having been injured in the performance of an act of duty. But the Glenview's pension board never made a ruling. In fact, they voted 3-2 to dismiss the matter, and that the officer's son would have to be a surviving spouse to get his death benefits. Well, they lost, but now they're fighting it even more. This is the type of thing that reveals to law enforcement officers just how poorly their own police administrations and cities often treat them. This is a disgrace. And I'm calling out the city of Glenview. Time for you to do the right thing. Time for you to stand up. And for the police agency itself, administration, well, you didn't do the right thing. And now, look who's suffering for it. The child of one of your fallen officers. You make me sick. Well, okay. Now I've got to take my blood pressure medication because this angers me so deeply. But there's a lot more stuff going on here that we're going to talk about. California. Wait a minute, I got to get another blood pressure pill. Hold on a second. I've actually talked about this situation in the past, but now there's been a new wrinkle added. So this all revolves around a University of California, Davis professor. His name is Joshua Clover. He's a tenured professor with this university. He is, in essence, a employee of the state of California. Now, this is a man who quite literally molds the minds of college students. He's a literature, he's an English professor. But he has a few opinions that he just loves to tell people about law enforcement and about the violence he feels that they should face. In fact, he's called for their deaths. This is almost an incredible story, and one that has gotten basically no national attention whatsoever. This actually came to light after the death of a officer in the area, and a journalist had heard that this professor had called for the deaths of police officers. And this police officer was a beloved officer. And so when he looked into it, he found that this punk Clayton, or excuse me, Clover, had called for the deaths of cops, not just in his statements, but actually on social media. Here's a couple of instances of what he said. This is from his Twitter account. "I am thankful that every living cop will one day be dead, some by their own hand, some by others, too many of old age." Oh, what a nice thing to say. What an empathetic individual. What a man of such caring. Oh, my. But it gets even worse. Here's another one. Quote, "I mean, it's easier to shoot cops when their backs are turned, no?" Unquote. Mm-hmm. And then another one. Quote, "People think that cops need to be reformed. They need to be killed," unquote. Well, Professor, you're a pathetic creature. You're a man filled with hate. You're an ignorant, disgusting piece of feces. only because I'm polite. I have a few other things that I would like to call him. But I think you get the idea, right? So his statements were so, I mean, they're so out of line. They're so over the top. They're so cruel that a lawmaker, because here's the thing. When this journalist was doing the story, he went to the UC Davis administration thinking that, you know what, once he brought this to their attention, that they would take some action. Well, the action they took was praise him and talk about his rights to speak what he wishes and what a great guy he was. They basically gave him carte blanche to say anything that he wanted, including horrendous statements calling for the deaths of cops. So basically, they took no responsibility. Well, a lawmaker in California who was fed up with this tried to bring a discussion to the floor about how to get rid of this guy. Republican Assemblyman James Gallagher, he authored a bill called H.R. 22 in an effort to urge university leaders to terminate Professor Joshua Clover from his teaching position. But you know what? The Democratic majority of the state assembly refused to even discuss it, which reveals exactly how they value their law enforcement officers. And everything they do pretty much says the same thing. But now it's acceptable for a university professor to call for the deaths of police. I mean, it's so abhorrent. It is something that is uncivilized. I could throw a whole bunch of terms at this, but what it really comes down to is this lack of humanity, this lack of compassion and empathy that this individual has. And now he apparently has not only the right, but the permission of the state of California to continue this disgusting rhetoric of his and empower him even more. So it's pretty pathetic. And the Democratic Assembly of California once again shows its disdain for the men and women of law enforcement who literally laid down their lives for their communities. Pretty pathetic. Let's go down to Florida. There was some craziness that came out of Florida. And I got to tell you, this is really something to talk about. You remember, of course, the shooting, the mass shooting in the school in Broward County, the Parkland shooting, where a student walked into the school unopposed, opened fire, killing, shooting, maiming, and a Broward County school resource officer, a deputy, was outside of the school and refused to go in. This made national news. In fact, it was such a tremendous, not only embarrassment, but a watershed moment for the Broward County Sheriff's Department. And what happened as a result of this deputy, the deputy's name was Scott Peterson. He was a 25-year veteran cop. He was assigned to the school. He heard the shooting, but instead of going into try and neutralize the shooter, he hid outside. And the video footage revealed that. In fact, he refused to go into the school even when other officers got there. What a pathetic display. But it revealed even more problems, beginning with the top, with the sheriff, a guy named Sheriff Israel. This guy was a total embarrassment. He was an empty suit, politician with a badge. And his leadership was so pathetic, so absolutely incompetent, that as a result of this incident, the governor actually removed him from office, which is almost unprecedented. And then this guy's ego, Israel's ego, is so big, he actually sued and saying that, that he did nothing wrong, that his leadership was fantastic, and he sued to get his job back. Well, guess what? That didn't happen. But now, in what I think is an absolute surprise, Deputy Scott Peterson was just arrested for failure to protect those children. I have never heard of anything like this happening. And I'm not saying that it is undeserved. I think what Scott Peterson did was an absolute embarrassment to the Broward sheriffs and to law enforcement as a whole. There are certain times when you are tasked by the very badge that sits on your chest and the oath that you took to run to the sound of gunfire. Most cops I know do that unhesitantly, unflinchingly. He didn't. And as a result, perhaps more people died than should have, or could have, I should say. Nobody should die. Perhaps he could have taken out that shooter if he'd gone in. Or perhaps he would have lost his life. But you know what? I'd rather go down fighting and be a coward. He resigned. Actually, he retired. He had enough years on to retire. And then he refused to cooperate with the investigation by the Florida Department of Law Enforcement. Well, what they just did is something that I've never seen before. Arrested him and charged him with multiple felony counts for failure to protect those lives. This is going to be a very interesting case to watch, because there have been court decisions in the past which said that a police officer does not have to risk their own lives to save others. This flies in the face of those rulings. So this is going to be a very interesting thing to watch. And I don't know how he could live with himself personally, but, you know, we'll see what happens. You know that I'm always talking about the responsibilities of police leadership. I call out those who I believe have failed, those who have failed their officers and failed their communities. I celebrate and I herald those who I believe have acted with great leadership and ethics. Well, this one, guess which this one is. The Dallas chief, Renee Hall, says that offenders are forced to commit violent crimes due to a lack of job opportunities. Things that make you go, This is a Dallas police chief. And she has drawn the ire of citizens and law enforcement groups when she implied that society is to blame for forcing criminals who commit violent acts. Here's what she said. Quote, there are socioeconomic issues that are related to crime in individuals in this city. Okay, I'm not going to disagree with that one. Then she goes on to say, there are individuals in this city who have returned from prison who cannot find a job, who are not educated, unquote. I'm not going to argue with that either. You're absolutely right, Chief. But here's what she said after that. Quote, in these instances, those individuals are forced to commit violent acts, unquote. What planet is this moronic chief from? No one is forced to commit violent acts. Zero. And for you, Chief, to make excuses for violent criminals is a demonstration of your lack of not only leadership, but your lack of intelligence, your lack of knowledge, your lack of common sense. For you to rationalize with a statement as stupid as that reveals that your leadership qualities, well, you're disqualified from being a chief. But unfortunately, politics being what they are, she'll probably get a promotion. She certainly will not be held accountable, because that's the way politics are played. She's the chief of a major police department. And what this reveals in reality is how cities across the country are appointing and hiring police chiefs, not because of their abilities or because of their intelligence or because of their professionalism, but because of their politics. This is not the first time that this police chief has revealed her inadequacies. And the fact that she's come out so publicly with such a moronic statement as this is just one more demonstration of pathetic leadership. So we're about running out of time for the briefing room here, but we will go into the interview room, and I'll see you there. I want to tell you guys about a pretty amazing product. It's called Arrest My Vest Spray. And really what it's designed to do is when you are wearing a ballistic vest, you know, it gets sweaty, it gets hot, it gets drenched, you know, from working out in the street. And sometimes it doesn't smell all that well. And this is an amazing product that takes that odor away. And you don't even have to use it just for the vest. It takes pet odors away. It's great for your vest. It's great for your dog bed. Everything else that you need a deodorizer for, this stuff is amazing. Check it out. It's at stinkyvest.com. Go to stinkyvest.com and check out Arrest My Vest Spray and arrest the odors. I want to tell you about a company called Law Enforcement Specialists. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you're looking to work extra jobs like security and traffic jobs, these are the people you need to go through. We all know that working extra jobs is what gives us the extras, gives us that little extra payment that we need, or perhaps gives us the opportunity to take our families out to dinner a little more often. And the only way to do it is to be working extra jobs. So what they do is they're all over America. I think they're in everything but a couple of states. And they work with your organization, your administration, and find off-duty jobs to work. You got to check them out. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com. That's offdutypoliceofficers.com. And register with them, contact them. Now, if you have security needs, this is the company you want to go through as well. If you are looking for both security or traffic jobs, if you have a company that requires that, you want to contact these folks as well. They're good people. They're based in Arizona, but they have police officers and services all over the country. Go to offdutypoliceofficers.com.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep, but it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa. award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount or call 844-869-9958.
With me today in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, is a man you're all familiar with, I think, if you have been listening to the show. His name is Ray Dietrich. He is a had many years as a law enforcement officer, and now he is an entrepreneur. He is a great commentator, and I'm very happy to have him back on the show, Ray Dietrich. Let's get right into it, Ray. One thing that we have certainly found out is that there is no shortage of topics that we can talk about.
Yeah, it's every single day there's multiple things that pop up that irritate me that I'd like to share. So there you go.
And since you live in California, you served as a California law enforcement officer, you know particularly well the insanity that is California.
Yeah, it's the state where you get to not only fight the bad guys, but you get to fight the citizens and some of the admin too.
Yeah, and let's not forget your own state legislatures.
Yeah, you can't leave them out. They're particularly special.
Yeah, they are particularly special in the short bus kind of way. So, let's talk about what's going on there. Okay, if you have listened to this program prior to this, you would know that we have talked several times about some legislation that was being pushed by some very left-leaning California senators that would dramatically affect the way that police officers use deadly force. And now, there has always been, since a major Supreme Court decision decades ago, it has always been the, quote, reasonable officer, unquote, phraseology that was being used to determine whether or not an officer was reasonable when he or she used deadly force. Would a reasonable police officer feel that the circumstances of that threat demanded the use of deadly force? But now, what's happened in California? Will you go on and explain it a little bit, Ray?
Well, yeah, California, the state legislation is out here trying to rewrite the rules for use of force and use of deadly force in officers. So what they've done, I guess they've watered it down. At first, they had thrown in different language, which we'll talk about in a second, but some of the other language was also that, you know, they're looking for safe ways for, you know, officers to retreat in these encounters rather than use deadly force. But the big change is now they're moving forward, it appears, with changing it from reasonable to necessary. And just that change of a term, making it reasonable use of force to necessary use of force, that scares me. As a former California cop, I don't know who can judge necessary other than someone who's in our space, who's on the street as a cop or a peer of a cop, a reasonable person, right? The fact that you could have people untrained judging what's necessary or not having any idea of what goes into those kinds of incidents and a critical incident and the decisions made in just split seconds of time, I'm really afraid that you're going to see, you know, filings on officers just because of this language change. It scares me.
This is really something that is going to, well, it's going to affect every California law enforcement officer. And then my even greater fear is that other states will adopt this. So the current standard lets officers use deadly force if they have, quote, reasonable fear that they or others are in imminent danger. And now, this is a threshold that makes it rare for officers to be charged following a shooting and rarer still for them to be convicted. But this new law would bar police from using lethal force unless it is, quote, necessary to defend against an imminent threat of death or serious bodily injury. That term, and this is where it's so nebulous, is who is going to make that decision? I mean, once the officer makes the decision, now that's out of his hands. So who is going to be the determining individual who's going to decide whether it was necessary to use deadly force? And I don't know the answer to that question.
And based on what experience, you know, I lean on my time in internal affairs, my least favorite assignment ever, but I ended up on the shooting team and I investigated officer involved shootings for about 18 months straight. That's about all I did. And the reasonable standard also is to count in, you know, all the factors. Is it a 6-week experienced officer compared to a 20-year experienced officer? All of these things are part of that. It's the most chaotic situation that anyone can imagine. And if they don't have any context to what that situation is really like, and now they have this term of necessary, I don't know what unintended consequences, you know, unintended circumstances are going to be created from this. Like, what's going to happen that no one's thinking forward of? Like, I mean, are cops going to be arrested and then have to go to trial to clear their shootings more often than not? I don't know. It's terrifying.
I tell you, Ray. So I'm reading the what's basically the this is the statement from the person, the Democratic senator, Assemblywoman Shirley Weber. This is what she wrote. With so many unnecessary deaths, I think everyone agrees that we need to change how deadly force is used in California. We can now move a policy forward that will save lives and change the, quote, culture of policing in California. So here we go. This assemblywoman, who is basically blaming the police for the shootings, not the suspects, not the people who are resisting arrest, who are attacking law enforcement. It's the police fault. And that is the basic concept behind this change of this law.
It's crazy. I mean, we're just beyond that the person is responsible for their actions of being noncompliant now, right? Like that's just, we're beyond that now. It's just all on the cops. And, you know, I've been out on dozens of officer-involved shootings. And I've only seen, and I will say this openly, I've seen only one that had bad intentions out of all of those. Some of them may have been messy scenes or chaotic or whatever, but we had one that was in bad intentions, an off-duty shooting, and the guy went to prison for it. So the fact that we don't prosecute our own or police our own on these shootings and that we would need a change in the law for this, I mean, it's just nobody can be responsible for their actions. This is all about people, you know, blaming the police rather than people who don't listen to lawful orders. That's what we've come down to. So it's going to be very interesting. California needs to stand up for itself, though.
And, you know, you said something a couple minutes ago that's interesting. And it's also, it's rarely, I think, taken into consideration. And that is, you have a wide spectrum of experience when it comes down to the officers that are responding to all these calls, especially now where we're seeing such incredible turnover in law enforcement. So you have officers that that may have just a very little bit of law enforcement experience, and they have, you know, they're being called upon to make these life and death decisions, you know, very often within seconds. So now we're going to take these young men and women who may have a very short time on the street, they're going to make these life and death decisions, and now they're going to be held accountable to a much greater level than ever before, including, you know, let's face it, the whole reason for this legislation is to make it easier to prosecute police. That's the whole purpose of this. So, I mean, they're not even going to take that into consideration, what you just mentioned as far as the officer's experience level.
What we do is not a natural thing for people to do, is to go forward into extremely dangerous situations where you can be killed and then have to maybe take somebody down. That's not normal. And you know, asking someone out of the academy, maybe out of their FTO program, to act as if they're a 20-year veteran, it's not realistic. That's not how people work, right? Like, so there's a lot of things wrong with this law that scares me. And, you know, I hope this doesn't, I hope something happens where it gets kicked back to the Supreme Court. Unfortunately, that will probably take an officer being filed upon under this.
Yes, yes,
and maybe they can straighten it out, you know, but unfortunately that's what it's going to probably take.
Well, this is going to bear a lot of watching. I mean, this is going to make a lot of police officers even less encouraged to do proactive policing. So, I think that's part of the design of this. I think that there is a number of legislators out there, including the Shirley Weber, who has really doesn't want the police to police. So this is another way of chipping away at the very foundation of the country's law enforcement by making.
It couples with that trend in California over the last 5, 6, 7 years of decriminalizing all of the front end tools of law enforcement. Can't take people to jail for anything that used to be a felony anymore because they're legalizing it, or just saying, hey, you know what? We don't have room in the jail, so we're not going to prosecute this anymore. So now you're taking away the front end tool of street cops. Is it leads with dope on the front end usually, and then into more serious crimes as they make those arrests. That's gone. And if you do get into a deadly encounter because you're out there shaking the bushes and catching the bad guy, now you have to worry about whoever is judging you on the standard of necessary, and if you're going to be arrested for it. It's not setting up well for the California law enforcement officer, for sure.
No, it sure as hell isn't. And while we're on this topic, I want to bring up to the listeners that I had an amazing experience just a few days ago. I was invited to the Medal of Valor award ceremony for law enforcement at the White House, with awards being given by President Trump to a number of different law enforcement officers for valor. And I got to tell you, this was a once in a lifetime experience as far as my life goes. Being invited to the White House by a president who has really shown nothing but support and admiration for law enforcement officers. And there was a team of officers from California that were given this award for their heroics during the active shooting event that happened at a voting booth in California. And these guys took care of business. They the suspect was open fire on bystanders and the police, and these guys did amazing work and took him out. I wonder if this law was in effect when these officers took the necessary action that they did, if that would have caused hesitation on their part. You know, of course, you know, this is it's a question that we'll never know the answer to, but this is what I'm afraid of, that all the amazing, valorous conduct that these officers are showing all over America, will this now be, will this be harmed by laws being created like this? What do you think?
You know what? I think that over the years, as I saw as an FTO, this is how I'll give you context for it. As a field training officer, the officers coming out of the academy every single year were more scared to apply force. They're more scared of being arrested. They were more scared of losing everything because of making mistakes in the job. And I think the more fear that is put into officers is a horrible thing. It's probably the consequence that they want, the lawmakers, but you're pushing them to just be completely a reactive force. If you take away all the tools and reason for doing proactive police work because you're scared to get into a shooting where you take this you know, huge action and stop a shooter, and then 6 months later someone's judging you if it was necessary and maybe you should have shot the gun out of their hand. Like, that's where I see this going, Randy.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you see it in social media. Like, if there's a shooting with the comments, like, the regular person, untrained people, why don't you shoot the gun out of his hand? Shoot him in the leg. Like, all of the common things that you've seen in deadly force encounters, they just don't understand. So who is the judgment on there? If I was a cop, I mean, I think there's going to be people that this is in the back of their mind. They're going to wait longer. And the newer cops that come out every single year, I think, are more conditioned in the academies to be fearful of this stuff. And it's going to get people hurt.
It's going to get officers killed. There's no doubt about this. And while we're talking about just this very topic about who's going to be making decisions, there is a case that just came out of Newport Beach that leaves me shaking my head. So there was an incident in Newport Beach where a guy who apparently was mentally ill, of course, how are the police supposed to know that? But and it probably didn't help him that the fact that he was high on methamphetamine, decided to attack law enforcement officers in Newport. He ran at him with a pair of scissors, and they shot him and killed him. Well, now this has become a lawsuit that went all the way up to the Supreme Court, and the Supreme Court said, you know what, we're not going to hear this. But the Ninth Circuit said that, and this is where it's going to be very weird. Basically, what they're saying is municipalities and law enforcement officers throughout the nation should know whether, when faced with the peril of death, that they must consider not only the Fourth Amendment restriction on use of force, but also whether they are providing, quote, reasonable accommodations to the attacking suspect if he's mentally ill.
Well, I mean, that makes sense, Randy. I mean, if the guy's coming at you with some scissors, I mean, trying to get your gun out and protect yourself, you should know that he's mentally ill. Stop that, you know, have him calm down and go to a safe place. Maybe do some meditation. You know, maybe see if you can get him to release his head to drop the scissors. That seems totally reasonable to me, man. You know?
So now they're going to apply
I don't know.
The Americans with Disabilities Act on police officers who are dealing with mentally ill suspects. Are you kidding me?
I just don't know what they expect. Like, when they come up with these things, and it's about money, people are trying to get cash, right? And they'll use anything with their lawyers to do it. I've sat on the wrong side of these in a civil setting before. It's 100% about the money. But how is this even put on paper? The person is so ridiculous to even make this claim, like an ADA claim on a shooting. I don't know what cops are supposed to do other than survive. We don't get paid to get hurt. We don't get paid to get killed. There should be no more hesitation when someone's charging with a weapon, what his background is or why he's upset or his personal history. Like, that just doesn't come into it. So just another ridiculous, frivolous lawsuit. And the Ninth Circuit is just all about it. So there you go.
But you know what surprises me? And I'm very disappointed that the Supreme Court could have heard this case and then made a decision throwing it out, and they just opted not even to hear it. The American with Disabilities Act, are you kidding me? This is, of all the other stuff that law enforcement needs to consider in about a 3-second decision to use deadly force when they're being attacked, now they got to think about the Americans with Disabilities Act. I mean, at some point you got to just throw your hands up and go, what the hell is going on here?
Yeah, what is the expectation here? Like, what exactly do you want these cops to do to meet all these standards that people put on them? It's insane. It's absolutely crazy. And it's just another attack on law enforcement and people trying to get their pockets full.
You know, why we're on that subject, you know, there's a case coming out of Sacramento, and this is one of those where you watch the video, and you feel your blood pressure just mounting. There was the family of a 12-year-old boy who allegedly spit on a police officer while resisting arrest during an expletive-filled tirade has threatened to file lawsuits over the boy's arrest. I watched the video. This was in Sacramento. So the Sacramento cops did everything that this little punk, this little 12-year-old moron, is as defiant could be, screaming and yelling and spitting on the cops, and they arrest him. Well, of course they're going to arrest him. And then they put a spit mask over him because he's violently resisting arrest. And did you get a chance to see that video?
Oh, yeah, I saw it. And then I see the clickbait headlines. Police put bag over 12-year-old's head. And they're making it sound like they put a plastic bag over his head to choke him out, to suffocate him. If you're getting spit on, it doesn't matter how old the suspect is. You don't have to get spit on. Like, that's just it, period. Like, I don't care if it's an 8-year-old spitting in your face. You don't have to take that. Like, you don't sign up to be a cop to get spit on by anybody using a spit mask. And they did it the right way. This is going to come with a lawsuit, and it's just another thing. Like, let's not talk about the fact that this 12-year-old is so out of control. He's dropping F-bombs and spitting it at officers while he's resisting arrest. Let's not even go there. It's the officer's fault, right? And they were trying to suffocate him because I needed a good clickbait headline for the week to get my views up. That's what this is.
And the parents. Hold on a second. Let's go back in time a little bit. Can you imagine if you, when you were 12 years old, if your parents got a phone call from the police about you, about resisting arrest and spitting on the cops, what would have happened to you from your parents?
My dad was a sergeant in a sheriff's department. He would have picked my ass up from wherever I was and probably beat my ass in front of the police right there. Like, that would have been it. And I wouldn't have seen the light of day for a very long time. That would not have been acceptable in my household. I promise you that.
And I really think that this is part of our societal problem, that this 12-year-old felt empowered, literally empowered to get into a physical confrontation with the police. Because he did not face any consequences for his actions. And instead of his parents, saying, hey, listen, my son was out of control, and apologizing to the police, which is what should have happened, they're threatening to sue for $25 million.
Yeah, and this was all after, I think, they came upon this kid because he was being chased by security guards, like in a foot pursuit. So, I mean, there's so much more to the story than just, they're choking him with this bag, right? It's sad. It's really sad that people would rather use their kids as pawns to get cash than teach them how to be a good person. And that's where we're at today.
So the attorney, I love attorneys, man. They will say anything. And they will say anything to move their little needle to try and make money. The lawyer said that the preteen, hadn't done anything to lead him to being confronted by the security officer in the first place. This is what he says, quote, all of this for a 12-year-old who at worst was accused of asking people for money, which he wasn't doing, unquote. What the hell does that mean? What does that mean?
It's crazy. They're just making excuses for his actions, and it's a reasonable thing. If you're a cop and you come up, it doesn't matter. Like, that's the thing. Like, you, as an officer, if you're coming up and you see a security guard chasing somebody, you have a little bit of a trigger in your head to go, hey, this looks suspicious.
Maybe that's a clue.
I can stop him. I can find out what's happening and make an investigation. I'm going to detain this person. You don't need to know the history of it. You don't need to know his age, his date of birth. You don't need to know what exactly is occurring or why he's being chased. You need to make these actions and these decisions just based upon driving down the street and seeing something and judging it from that second. So where would, even if the guy didn't do anything, the cops are still good because they did the right thing and did a detention while they're doing it. So
what I'm seeing crazy at this moment is that their chief, Chief Hahn, is backing his officers, which is something I'm so happy to see, because we've seen just the opposite from law enforcement leadership all over the country when there's a snippet of video that paints the police in a negative light. Some of these chiefs are just, clucking their way to oh my goodness. Oh, we'll put these officers on administrative leave and get to the bottom of it. But this guy's standing up for his cops. And that's something that I've seen a couple on more than one occasion from this chief.
Yeah, it's huge. And I'll tell you, Sacramento is just, they have targets on their back. They're in the middle of, that's the state legislation area for California. most unfriendly law enforcement, you know, community you can imagine, essentially in politics. And, you know, seeing that chief stand up for his people, and just a month ago or so, that the DA out of Sacramento choosing not to file on an officer for what was made to be a controversial shooting, is a good step. It's nice to see that, you know, some of these chiefs and DAs won't fold to political pressure just because it's easier. So there is some of that coming out of Sacramento, which was shockingly good to me.
Well, and actually, it's that the case you referred to is Stephen Clark, or Stefan Clark, however you want to pronounce it, who was shot and killed by Sacramento PD after he, the guy had every drug in it known to man in his system, was breaking into cars and houses, and this is during the evening hours when he was chased into the backyard, turned out to be of his grandparents' house, where he was trying to escape. The two police officers, you know, told him to put, you know, show him their hands, and instead he moved forward towards them and then put his hands towards them with an object in him. Turned out to be a phone. This appeared to be a suicide by cop by every piece of evidence. But this is what sparked that new legislation about necessary. And this is why, and the reason that they did this was because he had a phone in his hand. So what this would have done, if they had gotten the language that they really wanted, it would have made, even though those officers reasonably felt that they were that there was a threat and opened fire, they would have been able to prosecute these officers because it was actually a phone and not a gun.
Yeah, they didn't get their way on the DA's decision, so they're going to try to legislate their way to a change. You know, it's crazy. These guys, it's the split second. We always talk about it, but you can't imagine how fast these things happen, you know, from being personally involved in them. Like, it is over in a second, and it starts, you know, faster than a second. And to have these extra doubts, it's just, you know, it's scary. But at least the DA didn't do anything on that one. Like, you know, and the last thing I'll say on that is, you know, it's never about the fact that he could have complied at any time. It's never a fact about all the things that led up to these shootings, even if, you know, the circumstances after the fact turn out to be a cell phone. It's never about any responsibility for these suspects and all the times they could have given up. They make it seem like these officers are out, you know, in a bloodthirsty hunt to shoot and kill people just whenever they get a chance. And I try to explain to people, like, there's probably, I don't know, 50 times in my career where I could have been justified in shooting someone. Totally, you know, but the law was on my side. All the legal expectations were there, and I didn't do it because I didn't have the fear level. It takes a lot to pull the trigger. And, you know, it's having these extra scrutinized laws against these guys, man, and everything that's happening, especially in California. It's, yeah, I don't know what's going to happen. I haven't seen it this bad in a while. Like with laws and such.
Me either. So we're about running out of time. We're gonna have, because we have a guest waiting for us in the interview room. But before we sign off here, I want to acknowledge the death of another law enforcement officer on our end of watch. Police officer William Buckner of the Auburn Police Division in Alabama. Police officer William Buckner was shot and killed at about 10:10 p.m. when he and two other officers responded to a domestic disturbance in the 3300 block of Wire Road. After the officers arrived on the scene, a subject at the mobile home opened fire on them, killing Officer Buckner and wounding two other officers. The man fled the area on foot, but was arrested early and the next morning, approximately 1 mile away. He was charged with murder. Officer Buckner served with the Auburn Police Division for 13 years. So, Police Officer William Buckner, Auburn Police Division, Alabama, end of watch, Sunday, May 19th, 2019. One more statistic in the war on cops.
Yeah, rest easy, sir. And I saw a really, really nice article about that where his neighborhood, the officers, his whole neighborhood, like, lit up the whole street with blue lights on their porches and a show a support for the family and stuff. They did a good thing out there. So
that's really nice to hear. So Ray, thanks for joining me again today on the Randy and Ray Show here at Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
I appreciate it, Randy. It's always a good time.
I want to thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. We try to bring you the truth about the American law enforcement officer and the stories that are written and reported about them. I also would love for you to come onto Facebook and look me up under the Voice of American Law Enforcement. Like me, follow me. And if you haven't, please check out the website that goes along with our organization, The Wounded Blue. It's thewoundedblue.org. This is a charitable organization that assists injured and disabled law enforcement officers. And if you haven't seen our film, go to either iTunes or Amazon or the Microsoft Store and look up The Wounded Blue, Service, Sacrifice, Betrayed. Thanks again for tuning in. We will see you next week right here on The Voice of American Law Enforcement.